hello and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, November 3rd, 2008. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's media partner is Essential Wholesale. Essential Wholesale has one of the largest selections of natural and organic unscented cosmetic spaces in the world, with over 1,000 stock formulations and custom formulation services, too. Find out more at EssentialWholesale.com. Every day we are called upon to perform and perform and perform at work, at home, in our communities, and outside of the home, perhaps the stakes are highest for indie business owners who must put our best feet forward day in and day out in order to win the next sales lead. If that sounds like a tall order, it is. But today's guest says that anyone can do it, no matter what their personality, strengths, or weaknesses. Our guest today is leadership expert and best-selling author Mark Sanborn. In his new book, The Encore Effect, he demonstrates through his own experiences, as well as those of others, how you can cultivate the traits shared by remarkable performers and achieve extraordinary results in all aspects of your life, especially in business. Mark, welcome to Indie Business Radio.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be with you.
Well, listen, Mark, let's get started sort of broadly here and tell everybody a little bit about Mark Sanborn and how it is that he became a leadership expert.
I've been interested in leadership from a very young age. I was involved in high school and some organizations that culminated in me being the president of a national youth organization in college. And over the years, I've been a practitioner in my own business and more recently the national president of the National Speakers Association. And I've become convinced that leadership doesn't make a difference. Leadership makes the difference. In other words, it would, as my friend John Maxwell likes to say, everything rises and falls on leadership. And I think probably many people think leadership is about leading others, and certainly it is, but all leadership begins with the ability to first and foremost lead ourselves and take responsibility for our own behavior and performance. So once we have taken responsibility for self, then we can go about earning the credibility and trust and respect that we need to positively influence and lead others.
Now, Mark, there's a lot of books on the market today about leadership. You mentioned one of your friends, the author who's written a couple of books on leadership that I've enjoyed. Tell me a little bit about how this one differs from some of the other ones we can choose from.
Well, my book before this book was called You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader, and I specifically spoke to the whole issue of leadership in that book. I think of The Encore Effect really as a book that can be applied to any performance, whether it's your performance as a leader, as a manager, as a sales professional, as a customer service rep, even as a husband or a wife, a parent. In other words, the truths are transferable because I believe that an encore performance is one that makes people want more of us and what we do. You know, it dawned on me as I was thinking about what could be better than the goal that most business people have, that is to get customers to come back. And it was a realization that the only thing better would be for the customer to demand that we come back. And I thought of all the performances I've seen over the years, concerts and other types of performances, where if you really enjoyed what you saw, the actors or the musicians, the performers left the stage, but the audience stayed and they cheered and they clapped until the performers came back. And I thought, wouldn't that be a great metaphor to be encore performers with our customers or with our colleagues? You know, to be the kind of a boss that an employee would really hate to lose, or the kind of an employee that a boss would never let leave. They would do whatever was possible to keep them happy and under their employ. And, you know, given the current situation with this crazy economy and the uncertainty of the pending election, I think that one of the worthwhile goals any of us should have as entrepreneurs or as business people is to be indispensable. You know, I mean, that's our ultimate job security, is to be so valued for what we do and how we do it that our customers and colleagues just won't accept any substitutes.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's interesting that you talked about the use of this as a transferable kind of a concept. And, Mark, from the perspective of indie business owners, that is very, very small business owners who are working on business plans and wearing all the hats and juggling everything, Do you find that this issue of leadership and how they can sort of bring it out within their own personalities is one that's kind of overlooked?
I think it often is, because most of us, and I certainly am a small independent business person, you know, we start with no employees, and you're right, we wear all the hats. And when the business gets too big for us to successfully do everything ourselves, we start to hire others. And I think one of the big mistakes that entrepreneurs make is assuming that the people they hire will have the same discipline, the same commitment, the same enthusiasm for the job that they do. And so they kind of run headlong into this dilemma of how do we get others to help us do what needs to be done? And that's really what the challenge of leadership is. And that means that we develop power with people, you know, not power over people. That's a short-sighted strategy, and anyone that's ever tried to get people to do things out of threat or compliance or using only the carrot and the stick, you know, they realize that that's not the best way to create commitment. You can get compliance, but you can't create commitment that way. So I think that, as I alluded to earlier, the first step is to first be responsible in your own dealings, in your own life personally and professionally, and then to learn how to get others to be responsible and to positively influence them to do the same kind of work that you believe needs to be done.
And Mark, do you think sometimes that the word leadership in and of itself sort of stumps people? Because what you just described dealt with responsibility and influence and motivation. And if leadership results from a good job of doing those things, do we really have to worry about that word at all? Because some people really do become a little bit shaky when they think about, I mean, they may be totally confident about their product, their service, their business, their structure and everything that they're doing. But when you identify them as a leader, they kind of go, oh, wait a minute, let me back up for a second.
Sure. Well, people can certainly be put off by the word, but, you know, what makes one a leader is their ability, not their title. Very often small business people, when they print up their business cards, they like to call themselves CEO, even though there's nobody else in the organization. And while that's technically true, the real test of leadership is your ability to get people to do what needs to be done. And so leadership is always about positive influence. At its essence, it's about positively influencing people to do what needs to be done. So whether someone thinks of themselves as a manager or a leader, the acid test is, are people doing what needs to be done, and are they committed to excellence in the way that they do it? So I wouldn't get too hung up on neither the wording nor the titles, but I would definitely want to embrace the spirit of leadership, which is, how do I positively influence those around me? What's interesting, by the way, is that, you know, most entrepreneurs by necessity are pretty good salespeople. And so when you think about it, sales is a form of leadership. It's positively influencing someone to make a buying decision or to decide to do business with you. And it's, again, the same principle, transferable. How do we use that same influence to get the people on our team to provide the kind of products and services that we want to provide?
If you have a question for leadership expert Mark Sanborn, you can call it in on our toll-free number, 800-773-0355. Now, Mark, I read the book, as I have read some of your other books, in just under 2 hours, and I'm not a particularly fast reader. But, Mark, do you think that this concept of leadership, that's enough time to kind of get a fire lit under people and really give them some nuggets that they need to really make use of the tips that you offer?
Well, nobody's going to be a leader at the end of 2 hours, but I guarantee that they will have the ideas they can use to develop leadership skills or to become a better leader. You know, many people that read leadership books are already doing a good job. They just are looking for ways to become better. So it's not about the length of the book, but it's about the power of the ideas. And what I find is most helpful is to read a book, you know, to highlight, to underline, to mark it up, and then to go back and systematically apply the ideas over time. So I do try to write, you know, little books with a big impact, knowing that we're all, you know, time crunched and time challenged. But the real test of a good book isn't just the ability to read it quickly or to be entertained by it, but to apply the ideas that are in the book, and that's where the reader comes in. You know, I can only go so far, and of course, my books are based on direct experience or the work I've done with some 2,200, 2,300 clients. So there's no academic philosophical fluff. These are all field-tested ideas that people can apply in their own businesses.
Right. Right. And so when people are sort of getting started to approach this issue, Mark, do they need to have a certain kind of a mindset? I know when we plan our businesses and when we replan them as they grow, you know, we learn a lot of things, and we in many instances find ourselves starting over and going back and learning some of the stuff that we should have learned at the beginning. And it strikes me that this book is something that can be read on the front end. So my question is, what do you recommend that people approach this book? What kind of mindset do you recommend they approach this book with?
Well, I think the best mindset is to look for useful ideas. You know, I think that the best answers are to questions that we're asking. You know, sometimes somebody will give us an answer to a question we never asked. But if the question that one begins with is, you know, how do I learn to influence more positively, whether or not I have a title, whether or not I have one employee or 1,000, then they will have the kind of orientation that will help them benefit from the book. The interesting thing about the Encore Effect is that, you know, I really wanted to give people a process or a system they could use to become remarkable, and this is the important part, in the important performances of their lives. You know, I don't think we should try to do everything remarkably. Sometimes, for instance, filling out an expense account, that needs to be done accurately, but it doesn't need to be done remarkably. And the person who tries to do everything remarkably is a perfectionist, and they probably won't do anything particularly well. But the question I think that we should ask ourselves as leaders and business owners is this: what are those things I'm going to do this week or this day that really need to be extraordinary? That, you know, and it might be a call on a particularly important client, or it might be a presentation to a potential new customer, or it could be a staff meeting where you really want to encourage people in a time when it's easy to be discouraged. But once we understand what the important performances of our lives are, then we can apply some systematic steps into making those memorable and getting people to value them and talk about them and want more of what it is that we do.
And I guess you can also prioritize them better as well, which is another big problem that business owners have. There's so many things to do. It's a huge job just to sit down and figure out which ones come first sometimes.
No, I agree. I think prioritization is critical. And the problem is that we often confuse activity with accomplishment. Mm-hmm. You know, you think that because you've been really, really busy all day, you've accomplished something. But if you stop to reflect, there's a funny paradox at work. Sometimes to become more productive, you have to do a little less. And that means you focus on the important stuff instead of trying to do everything and confusing the amount of activity that we have each day with the amount of accomplishment we create.
That's good. You can sometimes do more by doing less. That's a good segue into our first break, Mark. We're going to take a break, everyone. If you have a question for Mark about leadership and how you can apply some of his thoughts and suggestions and tips to your life and your business, 800-773-0355 is the number. We're going to come back in a little bit and talk with Mark about the 5 steps that he says we can all take. He calls them the 5 P's. So when you come back, you want to have a pen and a piece of paper ready or your laptop ready to take some great notes for how you can incorporate Mark's leadership techniques into your business. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
back to Indie Business Radio. This really is me, Donna Maria, sounding like she's coming down with a cold. So just in case you're wondering if it's me, it is. We are here today with my guest, Mark Sanborn. He is a leadership expert and the author of several books on the topic, including his latest, The Encore Effect, which is a wonderful book that Mark includes his five steps that we can take to really just bring our customers and people in our lives back for an encore. So we're going to cover those during the last two segments of our show. But first, I want to take a moment to tell you about my new media training program at www.themediaisyou.com. We're launching in Charlotte, North Carolina in February 2009 with several cities to follow. There's an early bird pricing, so if you're interested, you want to head on over and find out more details, watch the video, and sign up. But this is the most effective seminar. We've put it together, designed specifically to help small business owners be the most effective media outlets for their own brand. So head on over and learn more and register at themediaisyou.com. Mark, your book, The Encore Effect, has five steps that we should take, the five P's you call them, to really make sure that we're on our P's and our Q's when it comes to effective leadership. No, that was no pun intended. How about that? Our P's and Q's. And you say the first one is passion. Now, that's a word that's thrown around all over the place today. What do you mean when you say it here?
Well, first, you know, passion is fuel. You know, it doesn't do any good to have a gallon of gas if you don't have a car. So I just want people to know that I think sometimes passion is overrated and that we think that's all it takes to be a success in business. You have to have both fuel and an engine. And so I consider passion the fuel of the engine that we're going to talk about when we get into this process. But passion is an emotional investment. It's what gives us the drive and sustains us when things are difficult. It's what adds a certain spark to what it is that we do. But the problem is a lot of things that we're called on to do, we're not passionate about. And so I've heard that as an excuse. People say, well, you know, I'm just not passionate about this aspect of my job or this thing that I do. So in the book, I talk about the four places you can draw passion from. The obvious one is to be passionate about what you do. But there's three other ways to be passionate. The second is to be passionate about why you do it. You know, it's the purpose behind it. I mean, we hate doing strategic planning sometimes, depending on your wiring. But you do it because you know it's an important part of the success of your business in the future. And so sometimes you can be passionate not about the what you're doing, but about the why you're doing it. A third thing that you can be passionate about is how you do it. Years ago, I was asked to present a team-building training seminar, and the materials I was given were boring and terrible. And although I wasn't that passionate about the subject, I was passionate about making it an excellent program. So I got enthused in the why, and I developed a new program that eventually became a book. So it wasn't that I was passionate about the what I was doing, but I was passionate about how I did it. And, of course, the fourth, and I think the great safety net, you know, the one thing we can always go back to and be passionate about is who we're doing it for. That might be the customer, might be our family, our spouse, our kids. Maybe it's an organization that we support, you know, through our work. But that's really what makes passion, I think, human, is when we can associate not just the what, the why, and the how, but the who. You know, the who we're going to impact through our products, our services, our businesses.
Mark, I love the whole thing that you just said, but I want to go back to the very beginning. You said that passion is the fuel, and it doesn't do much good to have a whole lot of it if we don't also have a car.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think about it. If you got a gallon of gas and no car, it'll actually slow you down because now you got to carry the gas can with you. I've heard people on talk shows, TV, in books say, you know, you just got to have passion. Well, you do, but that's an incomplete statement, you know. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to let people know that, you know, what makes a performance, an encore performance, is not that someone technically played the notes correctly, but the passion with which they performed. But having said that, it's the technical ability, you know, it's the engine, the process that converts passion into measurable results.
And Mark, from a business perspective, does it also not apply, would you agree, from working with the thousands of people you've worked with, that you can have more passion than anyone else, but if your business model, your business plan is just not going to work, it doesn't really matter?
Oh, you bet. You know, I did The Big Idea with Donnie Deutsch a few months ago, and, you know, people would call in, and they were passionate, but their business models ranged from really good to really bad. So I would suggest that in those instances, it wasn't going to be the passion that made the difference. It was going to be the passion and the model. And the other thing is that we need to realize that passion shouldn't just be an emotion that when the emotion passes, we decide, you know, not to go into the office that day. It needs to be an ongoing commitment that says, because I am passionate about what I do, I'm going to do an extraordinary job, even on the days I don't feel like it. You know, I think that we become emotionally crippled when we think that we have to have warm fuzzies to do a good job. I had a coach many years ago, a speech coach, who said that if you think that the great actors on Broadway are passionate at every performance, you're nuts. He said sometimes they're tired, sometimes they're sick, sometimes they just had a fight with their spouse, and on those days, technique carries you.
Right.
Which is why I give equal emphasis to technique and not just passion.
That's a really good point. I've never heard it quite put that way before, although your book does describe that. Thank you for that added detail, because I do think that we hear so much about passion, and there's so much. That's the easy part, right? Everybody's got a passion for something, or usually more than one thing.
Well, you know, the thing about passion is passion kind of changes when it becomes a livelihood. You might like to play golf, but I guarantee you that there's a difference between playing golf and touring as a pro. As a matter of fact, when you go pro, in most professions, you'll realize that you have the risk of losing some of the fun that you enjoyed about your game, because now you're not doing it just for feeling good, you're doing it to pay the rent. So, you know, it's about passion and technique, and that technique is what keeps you on the circuit as a pro golfer, not just your enthusiasm for the game.
Right. Your second step, Mark, is be prepared. Prepare. How remarkable performance begins. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I'm really put off by a society that values winging it. You know, we talk about, well, you know, I didn't really prepare it, I winged it. By and large, people who are good that look like they're winging it are just so doggone prepared that it looks natural. There is no professional that I know that wings an important performance. You practice and you prepare. And the preparing starts with knowing in advance, what am I trying to do? What's the objective and the outcome I'm trying to create? It's the difference between flying to a conference in your profession and getting to the conference and getting the program and going, I wonder what's going to happen and what sessions I should attend, versus saying, you know what, if I'm going to spend all that time and money away from work, I better know in advance what sessions I'm going to attend, who I'm going to meet and network with, what I'm going to learn. And that preparation is going to leverage the value you receive from that conference or that event. In the same way, any interaction that we have during the day, if we've thought about it, even for just a little bit, if we go in more prepared, all other things being equaled, the prepared person is going to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And winging it is a myth. You know, I go back to what I've learned over the years about Robin Williams, one of the great comedic minds of our time. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's known for his spontaneous, you know, wit when he's being interviewed. I have friends that have worked with Robin Williams and shared the stage, and they say that the guy has got such a depth of material that he's prepared over so many years that what often looks spontaneous is nothing more than preparation meeting opportunity. So even a guy like that, you go, wow, how does he come up with that stuff? Well, you know what? I hate to pull the curtain back on the wizard, but he probably didn't just come up with that stuff. He probably worked and developed it through years of careful preparation long before he ever used it.
And Mark, where does repetition fit in there? Do you find that, again, with indie business owners, that you know, at the beginning there are certain things you have to prepare for, and obviously if you've never done them before, you have to prepare even more. But as time passes, like this radio show, for example, I know that you've been on my show before, and you're such a great guest, and you answer questions like this regularly. So do you find that over time, when you are passionate, when you are good at what you do, and you do have technique, that to some extent you can go into a new situation, and I don't mean wing it as in, you know, you're sort of blowing it off and being off the cuff, but can you go in because you're so good at what you do and you're such an expert in your field that you can make an impact even if you haven't spent the amount of time that you would have at the beginning?
Well, certainly, and I think, you know, there's an overlap between the, you know, preparation and what we're going to talk about here in a moment, and that is practice. Mm-hmm. And certainly, I think that repetition makes it easier and more second nature. But I would point out an interesting metaphor. You know, I'm a pilot. I'm not current right now. That is to say, I don't fly. But every commercial pilot, and now think about it, these are men and women that have tens of thousands of hours of flying time. Every one of them, before the plane pushes back from the gate, goes through a checklist.
Mm-hmm.
And the problems do not arise because they go through the checklist. The problems arise because they don't take it seriously. And so the pros continue to do that, knowing that, you know what, maybe only one time out of 1,000 is this particular gauge not going to work. But if I don't check it every time, I'm at risk. So I do think it is easier. And obviously, the good news is it takes us less time to prepare. But I think we always need to remember that there's kind of a creeping decay that happens in our professional lives when we become too overly familiar with what it is that we're doing, and we stop preparing as much as we could.
And so the overlap then goes into the area of practice.
You know, practice doesn't happen in business. You know, it's football season, and even though our Broncos got beat yesterday, I can tell you they practice all week.
Right.
5 days they practice for 1 3-hour game. Business isn't like that. You know, nobody says, hey, you got till Friday to practice, and then Friday afternoon you got a client call, all right? Game day on Friday. No, we practice and play. What that means is if we learn and get better in business, we do it while we're playing the game. The problem is the only way you can get better when you practice and play is when you're deliberate, when you're looking to learn instead of just going through the motions.
Right.
Jeff Colvin's got a new book out that I really like called Talent is Overrated. And one of the centerpiece themes of his book is what he calls deliberate practice, which is to say you can hit 1,000 golf balls. And I'm not a golfer, by the way, but I understand the game. You can hit 1,000 golf balls and still not be one bit better than when you started unless you're hitting every golf ball with the intention of hitting it better, figuring out what you did right, what you did wrong, what you need to change. And so I talk about two kinds of practice. I call it practice in play, and that is paying attention as you go through the day. Hey, what did I just learn? What worked? What didn't work? And the radical idea is, what would happen if you took just a couple hours a week and you actually practiced outside of play? That is to say, you set aside time, you made time to practice the key skills that would make you better. And in the book, I talk about it with an acronym I call SCALES, S-C-A-L-E-S, because all music is built on the scales. To learn to play an instrument, you first learn the scales. Well, I use SCALES as an acronym that stands for Summarize Critical Activities. That's the SCA. In other words, you say to yourself, you have a lawn care company. What are the critical activities that make me a success? And those things might include advertising, might include prospecting, it would include the services you perform, the crews that you send out, and you come up with all these critical activities, and then you go to the learning essential skills. In other words, you think in terms of activity skills. What activities make you successful or make you remarkable? And then what are those skills that enable you to do those activities, and you practice the skills?
That's really good. Summarize critical activities and then
learn essential skills. And you've got scales, an easy way to remember that process.
Very good, very good. I like that. That's easy to remember. So you also talk about performance. Okay, so we've got our passion, we've prepared, we've practiced enough to take the show on the road, and now it's time to perform.
Well, the biggest challenge we all have, you know, and when we say perform, I want to just remind your listeners, you know, we're not talking about acting, we're not talking about trying to pretend to be who we're not. We're talking about who is that person or group of people that is now in front of me or engaged with me by phone or in person that I'm doing something for, whether it's selling them, serving them, delivering some product or service. And in any performance, the biggest challenge I think we've all got is to get their attention, you know, to break the preoccupation where we're in a staff meeting, we're trying to impart some important information about new initiatives, and our staff's thinking about where they're going to eat lunch or the fact that their kids fail in math or wondering about, you know, where they're going to have a beer after work. We live in a time where the only thing people have less of than disposable time is attention. I mean, we're just bombarded, you know, with requests for our attention, you know, BlackBerries, email, phones, cell phones, TV screens, background noise, people. The first key to a remarkable performance is to get the attention of the audience, you know, to break that preoccupation. And the goal, of course, is to engage them. Now, most of us have kids or our kids are older. You know, my kids, like most kids today, are crazy into video games, and they love TV, and they go into this zone where I have to first get them to give me the eye contact, turn off the TV, turn off the video game. But, you know, that's only the first step. Once I've got their attention, then I've got to engage them so they're not just sitting there passively, you know, listening or watching my lips move. And I think we need to do the same thing at work. And I think that all good performances do one or a combination of four things. And I learned this, and I know in limited time today I'm not going to get into the background story, but they can make us think, feel good, laugh, or act. Now, generally in business, getting people to laugh isn't your primary objective unless you're a stand-up comic. But what I'm saying is that when you're engaging someone, when you're demoing a product, when you're providing a service, if you can get them to do one or more of these four things, feel better about what they just experienced, think better, laugh and have a little bit of fun, and or behave differently or act, you've accomplished something significant, because all great performances do one or more of those four things.
That really is a good summary. We're going to come back and talk with Mark. His final P, that is, to becoming remarkable and putting on an encore performance every time. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Back to Indie Business Radio. You know, it's the first part of November and the holidays are upon us. If you're looking for some special holiday gifts, then I invite you to check out IndieBeauty.com. That's I-N-D-I-E Beauty.com. Not only can you connect with the people who make your cosmetics and personal care products, but you can also buy them there. Now, the site just launched a few days ago and there are already 600 members and dozens of indie brand personal care products communities that you can join to learn about product ingredients and learn about some of the great cosmetics that small manufacturers can make and even sometimes customize for you and whoever you're giving a gift to this holiday season. Check it out at indiebeauty.com. Now, Mark, before we took our final break, you were talking about engaging your audience by making them think, feel good, laugh, or act. And I wanted you to comment on the connection that those things indicate is important to make in terms of an emotional sense with your audience. That seems to me to be hugely effective, is to connect with someone on an emotional sense and in an emotional way, in a personal way, before you then try to see if you can influence them in a particular way.
Well, you bet. And excuse me for coughing there.
Sure.
What You know, one of the things I learned as a professional communicator is when I was speaking to a meeting planner or a CEO about an upcoming event, I found out that it was better to find out in advance what the goal of the client was than to try to guess. And so I would always say, you know, what do you want your audience to think, feel, or do as a result of my presentation? Now, the thinking is intellectual, and sometimes we're trying to engage people intellectually. You know, if you're a financial planner, all the emotion in the world isn't going to be enough to justify a decision to invest money in a particular instrument. So intellectual is important. Emotional, and I do include two aspects to the emotional. Feeling good is obviously emotional, but laughing is a form of enjoyment, and that's an emotional benefit. And then, of course, behavior is what do you want people to do differently? And in selling, if somebody is engaged and they laugh and enjoy your presentation, but they don't sign the contract and buy anything, you know, you really haven't turned in a remarkable sales performance. So I think that those become objectives that should be overt and not after the fact, and where you say, wow, that went pretty well. They really seemed to enjoy it, or I really had engaged them, you know, by getting them involved in the demonstration. We need to know going in what we're trying to accomplish and then use as many tools as we can to appeal to the intellectual, the emotional, and the behavioral.
So you can start any kind of interaction with someone almost. You can figure out a way to say to them, if they come up to your trade show booth or whatever it is that you're doing, and say, well, tell me what it is that you're looking for. What sorts of things matter to you? Why are you here today? Something like that to kind of get them to help you steer yourself in the right direction.
Well, I think there's a couple things you can ask people, and I think that you don't even have to adjust much. I think you can ask people, say, what's the biggest problem you're facing in your business right now? Okay. You know, because all of us have products or services, it will help our clients or our potential clients solve some problem. But before you solve a problem, you need to know what problems are they facing. Another question that I like to ask, and I use it in my work, is I call it the king or queen of the world question. That is, if you were king or queen of the world, what would you like to see happen? Because that gets people to kind of dream a little bit, you know? Well, if I were king of the world, I'd like to see my kids get straight A's, I'd like to drive a new Ferrari, and I'd like to have a vacation home in Aspen. Well, you know, there may or may not be anything that we can tie into there, unless, of course, we're a realtor or a car salesperson or a learning center. But the point is that relative to your performance, let people dream a little bit. And to the degree you can speak either to their hopes and desires or address their problems and fears, then you will really be able to engage them in the performance.
Mm-hmm. That emotional connection, it sounds like it's really, really important, and we all can do well by our businesses by making sure we try and make that connection. Because, I mean, that's what makes you memorable, is connecting.
Oh, exactly.
On that
the opposite, Seth Godin in one of his books says the opposite of remarkable isn't bad, it's good. Because remarkable can be bad. You can see something that's remarkably bad, and you tell people, I can't believe the service I got at that restaurant. It was terrible. Or it can be remarkably good. But just good is not notable. Average good, you know, what I expected, it doesn't stand out. So remarkable stands out. Of course, the key is to stand out in a positive way, not a negative one.
Not a negative way. And, Mark, the last of your P's is polish. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, you know, you got to keep polishing your performance. No matter how good you become, you can always be better. As a matter of fact, the better you become, the more you realize you need to learn about whatever your craft or your profession is. So I'm always looking for little ways to take my game not just to the next level, because, as you know from the book, I don't talk about the next level. Everybody wants to go to the next level. I talk about two levels up. The way you stay ahead of your competition is you don't just try to take your game to the next level. You try to get a decided advantage, and you say, what's two levels up look like? And so after every performance, you ask yourself at least two questions. Number one, what are two or three things that went right that I want to make sure I do again in the future? What are two or three things that either went wrong or could have been done better that I can change for the future? You know, and in some businesses, they're called post-mortems, and that, of course, sounds a little gruesome, but the reality is when the performance is over, before you start preparing for the next performance, ask yourself, how can I polish the next performance by learning from the performance I just completed?
So you really sort of are talking about a postmortem then, because it's after I'm done.
Right.
What can I do next time if I have a second chance to do better?
Well, and if not for that very same customer, you know, a second chance for a different customer or a different colleague or a different situation.
Now, Mark, I want to ask you a question that we didn't talk about in advance, but I'm very curious about how you feel about this. We've got an election coming up tomorrow, and we have two extraordinary leaders who have different leadership experiences and different backgrounds. What are some of the things, Mark, that you've noticed about both presidential candidates that make them stand out in terms of incorporating your five P's and polishing themselves and being the influencers that they are?
Wow, well, that's a great question, and certainly it puts me on thin ice.
Not asking for your personal preference.
No, I know. As it relates to their performances, well, first let me just preface this, because I always say this, and that is that I think we need to all vote, but I think we need to be informed, and it's of course a little late in the game, but it alarms me sometimes that we will vote on important topics or for candidates based on sound bites and short TV messages because we're unwilling to do the hard work of either understanding the issue or really understanding the candidate. So I hope that your listeners, many of whom have probably already voted absentee as I have or who are voting early, I hope in the future we'll all do the hard work of being informed about the important decisions we make.
The good thing is that, I mean, anybody who is listening to this radio show is probably also on the Internet, and it's very easy to get a good overview of both candidates' positions on many important issues right there at their website.
Exactly, and I think that there's no excuse. 20, 30 years ago, it was harder, you know, to get that information.
No, it isn't.
Well, first of all, let me just say that, you know, Barack Obama is a great example of an engaging performer, somebody that really knows how to speak to his audience, get their attention, and engage them. You know, he's certainly an excellent communicator. You know, his campaign ads on TV where he's doing kind of the one-to-one communication seems very natural. He really connects well with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of his great strong points. I think that it's interesting. John McCain is a person who, whether or not you agree with his track record, has a great deal of substance,
mm-hmm.
but tends to be far less effective in communicating that substance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you put the two together, again, regardless of your party or preference,
right.
what you realize is that good leaders and good candidates need both style and substance, not one or the other. It doesn't do any good to have substance if you can't communicate it. It doesn't do any good to be stylistic if you don't have substance. And so all of us can learn from the fact that, you know, we need to pay attention to kind of, you know, two dials on our dashboard. You know, and sometimes you see this in healthcare. You know, you go to see a doctor who's really good at practicing medicine, but they're terrible at communicating with you or explaining to you or empathizing with you. And then sometimes you see a doctor who, you know, is just a hail fellow or a good old gal, but you wonder if they know what the heck they're doing. And we look for leaders the same way. We want people that can both communicate well but be substantive in their performance. And I think that, again, to oversimplify, that's, you know, two significant differences is Obama is a great communicator. John McCain, I got to tell you, I think McCain has got a great track record and is a patriot, but his ability to connect and to, you know, engage people has not been as effective as it could have been.
Well, you know, you said it's an oversimplification, but I think it's a nice one because if you apply that to business owners who are listening to this radio show, who have wonderful products and services but haven't figured out what style they have and how they're going to communicate that, then they can quickly find their weakness and work on that. And then vice versa, if you have great style and everybody likes you and you're outgoing and you're energetic and communicate well, but they tell you that your products aren't so great or you kind of know that, then this is a really good model for anybody to follow. And because there are such broad categories, anybody can be helped by looking at it this way.
Well, entrepreneurs and business people need to think packaging and product. You know, it doesn't do any good to package a bad product well. It doesn't do any good to package a great product poorly. And you're right. We can pay attention to both and improve our effectiveness by doing so.
Now, Mark, tell us a little bit about your experience on The Big Idea. That's one of my listeners' favorite shows. And tell us what you were on there to do and what you noticed in terms of some of the small business owners who were there wondering if they're going to be the next multimillionaire with a product.
Well, you know, the show moves very fast, as anyone who watches it knows. And, of course, you know, in that kind of an environment, we were the panel of experts that I was part of. We were ostensibly speaking to the topic of leadership. And, of course, you know, leadership's a big topic. So in the brief amount of time, and again, you know, Donnie Deutsch is the primary focal point of the show. People want to get Donnie's take. They want to engage with Donnie. You know, the experts are there to add ideas, hopefully to add value. And the thing that, you know, stood out to me again was the idea that that people needed to have, you know, I mean, if I could look for one overarching concept, it would be that people needed to think more broadly about their businesses. I was sometimes surprised at the depth of a narrow expertise someone had about their business, but their total lack of knowledge about other important aspects. And certainly a depth of expertise is admirable, but you can't do that at the expense of the other things like, you know, fiscal responsibility and management and planning and those kinds of things. You know, so we tended to see people that had these amazing ideas or maybe an amazing skill, but had not developed it and built it out.
Wow. Well, it's a good thing, I guess, there's a show there then for people like you and Donnie and others to sort of open people's eyes up to some of these things. Mark, tell us a little bit about how we can get in touch with you. I know you do some private speaking at corporations and businesses, but tell us a little bit about how people who aren't employed at those places can come hear you speak or find out more about what you're doing.
Well, thanks for asking. There's a great website that has a lot of resources, free articles. We do a free e-zine, monthly e-zine, and some other things. It's marksanborn.com, and that's kind of the portal to all four of our websites. In addition to marksanborn.com, we have a website that supports each of our last three books, fredfactor.com, youdontneedatitle.com, and theencoreeffect.com. But rather than trying to remember all four, if they can remember Mark Sanborn, MarkSanborn.com, they can both contact me, they can look at the resources, visit our store if they're so inclined, and sign up for our free e-zine.
Well, that's pretty polished. Sounds pretty polished to me. It's great that you have the domain names for your book. That's for all of your last three books. That's great. I bet that helps drive some traffic to your main website, too.
Hopefully.
Well, Mark, it has been great to have you on Indie Business Radio today. Thank you so much for joining. I want to encourage you guys to head over to IndieBusinessRadio.com, where you can stream or download hundreds of my shows with experts on all kinds of topics, from leadership, as we have discussed today, to how to do your own PR and be effective in the home, be effective in your business. We have gathered a whole massive amount of content there to help you be successful. And visit Mark's website at marksanborn.com, where he's also got, I think, a fairly new blog there. So that's a lot of fun to think about as well. I've got some great shows coming up for you in the future on Indie Business Radio. Visit the website to find out all the details. And don't forget to check out themediaisyou.com, where we're putting together what I think is the only media training program that's specifically designed to help small business owners be their own media outlets using all the great technological tools that we have available to us today. And so before my voice gives out, I'm going to bid you a farewell. Have a great week. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.